I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And welcome back to On Air. This is a weird one. Our first time ever, I think, recording with a 12-hour time difference.
I know. We're determined to keep trying to make sure that our scheduling for the episode is as complex as ever. But to be honest, this one now where you are 12 hours ahead of me, this is easier than when either of us is like 6 hours or 8 hours, especially,
you know,
so it's not too bad. As long as you have the energy, because I know what you're like, and it's the end of your day, it's the beginning of mine, and you know, but I think you're going to be fine. There's plenty of juicy things we need to get going with. How's it going? Where are you?
I am in one of my favorite places on earth, one of mine and Oscar's favorite places, New Zealand, far from everything and everyone, exactly
amazing.
How I like.
Amazing. I can't believe you flew all the way there just because it's the State of the Union in the US. I can't believe it. That's real.
Yeah, I was like, how can I get as far away as possible?
That was a joke.
I mean, I thought you were going to say that I flew all the way here for a cake on Emirates, which...
Well, I think that's not a joke. That's true.
So I know that sounds absolutely insane. And I just want to give some context because when our... So we're here with some friends. They texted us less than a week ago asking, where should we go? And we were like... Oh, come to New Zealand. We're going next week. So they went, okay. And they booked flights and literally were here 5 days later with us. And when I told them that the reason we booked to come here when we decided to come here was because I had pre-checked the menus, which Emirates posts online, and seen that February specifically was the month with my favorite airline dessert in the world, their pistachio and raspberry mousse cake with white chocolate on the side. I was like, okay, we're going to New Zealand in February, not in January, not in December, February. And that's why we ended up flying Emirates to New Zealand.
Okay.
When we did.
So just to ensure that this is not kind of interpreted in the incorrect way, or perhaps people think that this is what you do, right? You just sit at home and you check airline menus in first class or business class and you say, February looks good, let's go in February. Others choose restaurants, you choose ultra long haul flights. You were planning on going to New Zealand anyway, and then the menu decision is ultimately what determined your choice to go now, right?
I know, exactly. We were gonna, so when I got 1 million subscribers last year, when I finally reached that after almost 16 years on YouTube, right? Oscar and I had already decided beforehand our reward is going to be to do the world's longest first class flight, which is Dubai to Auckland on Emirates A380. Mm. So we knew it was going to be expensive. But finally, when I got around to book it, which wasn't until, I guess, November, I had been checking the menus the whole time. And then I realized, never mind, this flight is not even remotely cheap. So this is not just going to be some enjoyment flight, celebration flight. No, we need to make a video and we better plan it to make it as epic as possible because this is only going to happen once. So
So this is not your usual kind of savvy approach with miles and points and so on.
No, I mean, I did use miles and points and I still saved about 50%, but 50% off the world's longest first class flight in first class is still extremely expensive. The most ever paid.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So we basically, I guess you could say, bought the most expensive cake in history because that's the reason we chose to do this. But it's a funny...
That's your YouTube title.
It's like, it's literally, I wonder if my friends were saying, am I the first person in the history of aviation to book my flight, decide when to go solely based on the dessert on the flight that I'm taking.
Yeah, I don't know if you're aware that this is the podcast and not your therapist, but I would say that you are in good company here because at least the listener is going to, I guess, admire the uniqueness of the intention of booking. I mean, it's true that you knew you were going to do this flight. You knew that it's likely to be kind of once in a lifetime, especially because of the duration, the length. So why not go when you know that the menu is going to be excellent, not least because you are vegan, therefore it really matters. And for so many airlines, plant-based cuisine is not up there. You know, I think that's for like 99% of airlines, but Emirates is really rare in that scenario. So the decision-making behind, you know, the thinking behind your decision-making, rather, I think is sound. And I get that.
Thank
I see
you.
That. But can what I'm more amazed at, before you go on, is the screenshots of the group chat that Oscar had uploaded on Instagram, where you were discussing with friends, oh, yeah, so we're going to New Zealand in a week. I was like, come. And the response is like, okay. I replied like, what?
I know.
Whose group chat is this? What on earth? I mean, I get it, you know, in aviation and especially maybe intra-European, we're quite blessed with, you know, frequencies and lower fares to say, shall we go here this weekend? But New Zealand has it all. I replied saying, what group chat? Who are these people?
So these people are Claire and Peter, our friends who travel full time. So I guess that's how it can happen. You have to be a full time traveler in order to make it work, right? On a few days' notice. But this is the first time anything like this has happened to us. And it's just so funny to think that we're literally the furthest place from anywhere in the world and someone can join on a few days' notice, but we love it. Yeah,
I mean,
that was
I admire it. I also admire that. As I said, that was, you know, group chat goals. There's that trend, isn't it, about trips making it out of the group chat, assuming that the group chat had gone on for about 6 to 12 months, not with you guys, blimey. You know, one message, one reply, and there you are within the land of the sheep.
But I think everyone will relate to, and I relate to this with you, because we keep saying, oh, we need to do something. We need to do something. We want to do something. But like at the end of the day, it's almost easiest to just plan something a few days before. Because if you're
That's always how we've ended up doing it, isn't it? So if when you and I have gone somewhere or have met up anywhere, it's always last minute, because it's just so much better for us both to know that yes, this weekend we are free, or yes, on Tuesday we are free.
You know,
God help either of us trying to understand if we are free or not in 3 weeks.
It's impossible.
It's not.
And so that's the thing, right? If you don't have a predictable job, whatever it may be, if the hours are unpredictable or the workload, then you don't want to plan things far in advance. So if you know that on Saturday and 1 week forward, you don't have that much to do, then it's like the perfect time to be like, okay, let's do something on Saturday instead of let's do something on Saturday in 6 months. Not going to happen.
I agree. We're very aligned there, but I think most, you know, people need, it's funny. I often speak to maybe relatives or friends of friends who bring up this subject and have said, particularly maybe older relatives who have said that, when they, you know, for the first time drop this idea in their head that, oh no, it needs planning, and actually it doesn't need planning and you can just go, they then feel so confident and brave after and realize, what were they waiting for the whole time? Why did they associate it that if they are going to do that, it has to be in 6 weeks minimum because it's crazy to go. No, just go. If you know you're free and you can, and everything works out that, you know, yes, it's in a few days, but still it looks like it could work, do it. You won't regret it. That's exactly the message.
And it also helps you from overthinking, because I'm a huge overthinker when it comes to trip planning. So I'll decide on something, but then I'll start doubting it if I have too much time. Like, should we really do that? Should I change that? Versus if you book it last minute.
Do we really want to hang out with Alex in the Far East? I'm not sure. that's why I sprung it on you 5 days before, and 5 days later we're in Korea.
Yeah, that's how to do it. So guys, if you want to travel with us, you know what you need to do is text us on Saturday, I'm in Taiwan, want to come? Way more likely to happen than anything else, whether it's an event or something else. It's always easiest that way. I just have to say one more thing about that flight. Taking a flight that long, this is my second longest flight I've ever taken besides New York to Singapore, direct on Singapore Airlines. I realized that even in first class, whatever the flight, I do not appreciate having to try to sleep on a plane. Like, it's just a waste of time and money, which is why I think for me, Middle Eastern Airlines, for example, are such a precious thing. If you're taking a journey from, let's say, Europe to Asia, and being able to take 2 6-hour flights, I think for me will always beat taking 1 12-hour flight or 1 18-hour flight, because you can, like, I just don't want to try to sleep on board. It's a waste of your time on the flight. It's a waste of your money and
the pressure.
You won't sleep well. Like, I've said this before, even the world's best first class beds on the world's best airlines are still less comfortable than a Holiday Inn Express bed. You can get a nicer bed at almost any hotel than on the world's best airlines in first class, just because of the ergonomics and the requirements of that type of seat. It has to recline in most cases, where it's really hard in some cases. So I just think, like, you don't always have to go for the longest or the biggest. That really, I learned from this, is not better.
Well, it's incredibly valid, because we've also spoken about you can be provided with the most comfortable, the best, for example, first class in the business, but you're still on a 777. So that still means the driest air ever. It still means the whooshing sound. It still means all those things that you actually can't remove from the passenger experience that make it very difficult in many scenarios to sleep. So you're right. But also you like the pressure of not having to feel like, oh, it's a 2 a.m. departure. I landed first thing in the morning. You have to sleep. Otherwise, you've failed. You know,
it's absolutely.
There's a bed, so it's got to be done. And then otherwise, you'll arrive and you'll be raggedy all day. You know.
Yeah. Always, in my opinion, avoid a red eye. And I will say, I've spoken to several people lately who tell me,
red eyes is so convenient.
Well, it's convenient until the next day, when your day is basically ruined because you've slept 3 hours of so-so sleep, and then you have to push through it. And then it takes several nights to catch up on sleep, versus just take an early morning flight or an evening flight to sort of have the main part of the day free and then sleep at a hotel when you arrive. I'm so pro that. And that, actually, wait, this is such a great transition into our first topic, Alex, which,
oh God,
when we both read this, horrified. I think the shivers that went down our spines of absolute horror were pretty bad.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So you may have seen this. It did make headlines across Europe, and some US publications ran with this as well. But shortly after we recorded last week, an incident, now we learn multiple incidents, took place at Munich, involving Lufthansa flights that were scheduled to fly to different destinations late at night, but were delayed. And essentially, here's what has happened. The flights, and the one that got the most publicity, but we now understand there were five in total, but the one that got the most publicity was the flight from Munich to Copenhagen, an A320neo. Dan and I delivered Lufthansa's first A320neo over a decade ago. And so this is a European, you know, imagine if you haven't flown Lufthansa and you're wondering what a 320neo looks like in your head right now, imagine what an EasyJet aircraft looks like, what a Ryanair cabin looks like in your head. You're picturing 3-3, right, on either side.
Yeah.
So this aircraft was supposed to depart at 9:30 p.m. and arrive a little while later at 11, but that's not actually how things started to pan out. So the aircraft was delayed to just before midnight, and this happens especially at night time. And then the passengers were on board, and every half an hour or so, we understand that the crew were updating them that the flight was not going to be taking off as planned, not least because Munich doesn't operate throughout the night. It's not a 24-hour airport in that sense. As with most European airports, they close at a certain time. And so while the passengers were now on board this aircraft and the flight is ultimately cancelled, what happens next typically? Well, they're waiting to be transported back to the terminal, right? So that didn't happen. And then 30 minutes later, the crew provided an update to explain that that's not happening anytime soon. And then another 30 minutes later, it's still not happening. And then at 2 a.m., the passengers on this flight, a full flight from Munich to Copenhagen, it's now on the ground at Munich. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Departure should have been hours ago. We're informed by the crew that Munich Airport was in fact now closed, which would have been obvious to many of them because there are no flights, as I said, throughout the night. But because the airport was now closed, that all of the staff, including bus drivers to transport the aircraft, which was on a remote stand, back, all of the bus drivers that would transport the passengers back to the terminal, they had also gone home. And that there were no other options to take passengers from the A320 to the terminal. Mm-hmm. They went as far as explaining that there wasn't even anyone in the terminal to be able to receive them, nor to reaccommodate them or to handle their cancellation if they were taken back to the terminal. So it's at this point, at now approaching 3 a.m., that the passengers were told they would not be able to leave the aircraft. And in fact, they would be spending the rest of the night on a remote stand on board this A320 at Munich Airport. This was the scenario for 4 or 5 other flights caught up in the same scenario, where because of these rolling delays, Munich had shut up shop and left, and the passengers were forced to spend the night on these tight European aircraft on a remote stand. How could this have happened?
I mean, it's absolutely unthinkable. I can't to think that all these people. Okay, here comes the Lufthansa slander again, which always has to appear.
I know, but they don't help themselves. Yeah,
they really don't. Seriously. But to think that all the people who had to go home for the night and not give an SHIT about hundreds of people stuck on planes is insane. To think this manager and that person's manager and that person's manager, and no one just being like, maybe we should try to solve that. The fact that someone in a higher position was not called to try to remedy this issue is crazy, because this would be bad enough on a long-haul aircraft, but these intra-European aircraft are not made to spend the night on. Rarely passengers have to do it when flying from the Middle East, for example, Cairo or Amman to Frankfurt and Munich. We've spoken about Lufthansa planning to introduce a real business class seat for those routes, but needing, first of all, not knowing it's going to happen, and then ending up on the aircraft overnight for so many hours is so beyond unacceptable. And to think that Lufthansa is of course going to do the bare minimum, which is offering the minimum EU compensation, which in my opinion does not remotely remedy what these passengers were put through, is so, so crazy. What would you do if you were on this flight, Alex? Because I'm worried about what I would do if I was on this flight.
Well, firstly, I mean, I was flicking through in my head visually the catalogue of people that I'm connected with on LinkedIn who work at Munich Airport, one of Europe's best airports. And
well,
they were all perfectly content and
best airports.
Tucked up in, yeah. But it is good for connections. I would always choose Munich over Frankfurt, Paris, and so on. And yet they were tucked up in bed and blissfully unaware of all these passengers that, through no fault of their own, they had not diverted in from elsewhere. They had started their journey from Munich. They were taken to the aircraft against their own will because they thought that the flight was going to take off, and then told, oh, everyone's gone home now, so you're going to spend the night there. It's insane. This is an airport that accommodates 40 to 50 million passengers per year, and there is no plan for one bus driver who's on call, perhaps at home 20 minutes away, who can't come in to return the passengers back to the terminal. This is, I mean, this is not something that we are exaggerating. Let me just remind or just add this little bit of context now, which is that authorities are now investigating whether this incident will in fact result in criminal charges. And a spokesperson for the Upper Bavaria North Police Headquarters confirmed to German media that they are exploring the event, which is currently being assessed by the public prosecutor's office. They say that although this is standard procedure, at this time, they know that where Lufthansa had previously focused on this specific flight that we're talking about, actually it was worse. And as I say, there were five flights in total that were affected caught up in the same night flight ban, which is why the aircraft were denied takeoff clearance and so on. The airport explained that the reason passengers had to stay on board was because of communication breakdown, and it was the late hour and so on, and because services are so severely limited. But they said that there was no danger to passengers at any time, and passengers were provided care for on board.
What are they talking about?
Ridiculous. Lufthansa Group. Go on.
This is scheduled to be like a 1 hour and 20 minute flight. There's not enough drink, like water and food on that type of flight. There are elderly people who can't sleep. No one can sleep on Lufthansa's ironing board intra-European seats with no headrests, no recline. It's literally worse than sitting on any type of chair, basically. Elderly people could get back problems that won't go away because they're sitting there all night. People in business are not much better off. People with kids are struggling through the night in this situation. Some people need medications, which they haven't accounted on needing because they're staying overnight on the plane. And when I first read this, when it was only the story of Copenhagen, I thought, yeah, of course, it's very Scandinavian to not cause an uproar and not demand that the door be opened, you know, because in a lot of other parts of the world, I think that would happen. But it's still just wild that no one did that and that they ended up spending the night, because there's a few tricks you can employ in situations like that to ensure that you get to get off the plane for one reason or another, not least in a lot of situations people call the police saying they're being detained against their will.
But before we go into that, and this will be the next bit, let me just pick apart when Lufthansa said they cared for passengers, quote, with onboard comfort items, food and beverages. This is understandably being revealed to be a complete lie. We know that Lufthansa short-haul flights, especially a hop to Copenhagen just an hour away, have no such items anymore. For example, they don't have pillows on board.
No.
Food and beverage would be the small snack that you're getting on the hour flight in economy, for example. So we're going to pack of pretzels or whatever, and that's that. It's not like they prepared this aircraft for an overnight service, because this aircraft doesn't fly overnight services. It's literally the alternative to a train. It's just an hour hop. I imagine, and I would encourage any passengers who were caught up in any of these five aircraft scenarios to lawyer up, because this is something quite unprecedented. And now let's go into, as you said, what could passengers have done? What would we have done? I dread to think.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, my concern is that calling the police in Germany might not have resulted in anything. I don't have experience with that. But obviously, you can call the police and say you're being unwillingly detained. I question what would happen in that case and how fast it would happen. That's my problem. What do you think about calling the police?
Well, this is an interesting one, because previously in many scenarios where passengers have kind of been kept on the aircraft against their will, passengers have called the police in different jurisdictions in different countries, and the police have intervened. They have kind of demanded that they are able to board the aircraft via stairs, for example, and they address the situation, and 9 times out of 10, they get the passengers off. Because it's less air travel and more what's happening within the jurisdiction of where the airport is, right?
Yeah.
So in this scenario, would I have called the police? Would we have called the police? Let's say we were both on board. Let's say we imagine it was our decade.
If we were both on board, pandemonium.
Goodness, the scenario is running through my head.
I know.
Would we have called the police? I would have said yes.
I think that's step one. Well, no.
Step one would have been call the police.
Firstly,
step one would have been dialogue with the crew and the captain.
Yeah, yeah. And I would have asked them, don't you think this is unacceptable? Don't you think we should get off? Then you threaten to call the police and you tell them, call Lufthansa to sort this. Or I call
Well, we
police.
Would have been on the phone to Lufthansa as well. I would have been waking up anyone with the word Lufthansa in my contact book.
But everyone would have their phone on Do Not Disturb and wouldn't pick up, is my assumption. So then...
like the airport, all of Germany in a state of DND?
Obviously. Yeah, I mean, at midnight or so on a weekday, I don't think anyone would pick up. Then you threaten to call the police. If nothing is done, the next step would be to call the police and see how that goes. But if that is unsuccessful, then what?
Well, now it would depend on how the dialogue, how the communication was going with the flight crew and the cabin crew, because as we would have been highlighting, to be kept, we would not accept to be kept on board overnight against their will because they can't find anyone to get a passenger off. I think it's at that scenario where you and I, if we were on the same aircraft or if it was just one of us, would be communicating with each other, assessing the big what if, and we both know what we are thinking of when I say that.
Is so, before we say it, is it illegal?
I don't think we should say it just in case. But it would be crossing our minds at that point, because again, there's no way I would have accepted being held on an aircraft overnight for no different. If it's a security situation that was playing outside and you're kept on there for your own board safety, different if it was because of, you know, it was physically impossible because X, Y, Z. But because they're shrugging their shoulders saying, there is no bus driver.
Everyone went home to sleep. It's like, that is, what are you joking? That's not an excuse.
Also, that's where we should be, at literally, home, sleeping.
Yeah.
Not on your 320 Neo.
Yeah.
That thing that will remain, we won't mention until we... consult with lawyers.
Let's just be very clear that we're not talking about violence, okay? We're talking
nothing like that. We're talking about the first part of the safety briefing where they point.
Or where if you happen to be sitting in the economy seats with the most leg room, for example, there is technically a door there, right? To get a little bit of fresh air in. I think around 2 a.m., around 2 a.m., I'd start fantasizing about, you know what? I've always wondered what it's like to open one of these, you know?
See, the problem is that historically, in these scenarios, where without any proper justification, such as an operational shit show like what happened here, where that has taken place, and then a passenger has been denied being able to disembark to leave the aircraft. And as you say, they could have legitimate reasons, right? They might be feeling unwell suddenly. They didn't plan to spend the night on your old whatever, single R, and so on. Passengers, historically, in many scenarios, have then opened the emergency exit. And some of them have even disembarked via the slides in that scenario.
Sounds fun.
which we don't endorse, sheer desperation for the desperate situation that they're put in. I think Lufthansa got quite lucky in these scenarios. There are no videos of shouting that have surfaced. There are no videos of confrontations with crew or a passenger saying, we're going to get off. This type of thing happens when Ryanair delay the flight for an hour at night coming back from Ibiza, and the passengers are like, we're getting off, and they go towards the exit, which is whoa, you know, tranquilo, you know, that's not required. But for Lufthansa to have been putting their passengers through this and none of that to have surfaced on social media, God knows the demographic on board. Perhaps it was an elderly flight. Maybe everyone was coming back from a cruise. I'm not sure. But
I mean,
they definitely got lucky in that sense.
Again, what I thought when I saw Copenhagen was like, okay, yeah, these many of the people on these flights might not be the craziest types of people who would even start yelling in a situation like this, where I would certainly start being very upset. But I still think that wherever you're from, even if it was Japanese people, the most well-behaved people we can think of, everyone should raise their voice because it's not okay. And as I said earlier, I just know that Lufthansa is not going to make anything right for people. They're not going to adequately give them what they deserve after an ordeal like this.
I want to hear from a passenger who was on board. We have to find a passenger who was on board to better understand. Because, for example, again, I'm imagining my most recent Lufthansa flight from Munich was just a couple weeks ago, right? And if the crew behave in the same way that, for example, if they're at the front, kind of closing the curtain and gossiping amongst themselves in the forward galley, I would be furious.
Yeah.
You know, if communication wasn't crystal clear, or they were simply not coming out with the reality that the passengers were going to be, maybe they were trickle fed info, which is why they didn't actually realize they were going to be there for the whole night. But the reporting suggests that they were told this at about 2 a.m. It became solid enough for them to declare, look, you're going to be on board for the night. I don't understand how 200 passengers then say, okay.
Yeah.
You know, on a remote stand, if the aircraft was parked at the terminal and the aircraft was connected to the terminal via a jet bridge, this would not have happened.
Not go to places that have bus gates. Bus gates are hazardous, people.
Come on, let's not set a new fear in the industry that bus gate might mean that you stay because, on this tarmac.
Because we should also say that actually the master country of leaving people on planes forever is the US. And there it's because they're waiting for a jetway because they don't have bus gates. So people are sometimes waiting for 4 or 5 hours because there's no jetways. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword sometimes.
Of course. What would you have, thinking about you being on board, if you were alone in your determination to state how wrong this all was, and the other passengers were seemingly kind of quiet, just, look, I'm sure they'll get us off in an hour or two, or we've already been on for 2 hours, what's another 2 hours? How would you have been with that?
I think it would have made me even crazier because I'd be like, no one else is talking up, then it's my responsibility. I'm going to save these people who don't know better. Versus if other people are acting crazy, I'd more like egg them on and be like, yeah, you should open that door.
I think I would have been contacting every airline CEO in my contact book and demanding that they wake up. Every
airline CEO.
Just all the global airline CEOs and begging them to wake up Carsten Spohr remind him of what's happening down the road in Munich. It's crazy. When I was in Munich 2 weeks ago, we parked and a bus picked us up from a remote stand and transported us to the terminal for a flight connection and dropped us in this part of the terminal, which I'm not sure what it's known as, this kind of zone, where we should have been going through security and then passport control and then up into departures, into the transit area. And the bus door opens and we disembark the bus and the bus leaves and we go through the open door. And in front of us, we can see a security channel and all the doors are closed and there's nobody there and it's a ghost town. Then we look behind us, the doors that we just entered, they're also now closed. So now we're in this glass square kind of area with nothing. Can't go forward nor back. And a couple of police officers came after 10 minutes. They walked past quickly and they gave us a funny look and said, what are you guys doing here? We're like, we've just come off of this. He said, what flight have you come off of? Where are you trying to get to? He was like, oh, okay, I'll make a call. And we were there for quite a while. And then eventually someone waddled down from the far side. We could see through the glass and open the doors like... Yeah, I was like, oh, hi, oh, okay, come through. And it was, you know, no kind of, and of course, all the jokes about German efficiency and why were we standing there for almost 25 minutes? And it's as if, you know, international airport, passenger arrivals, connecting, what?
Yeah, you know, what do you mean? How is that's that? Not supposed to happen. Mean?
Yeah, so, yeah, it isn't, you know, I could see how... with a German airport and a German operator like Lufthansa, this kind of thing could happen. And at the same time, it's hilarious because it flies in the face of everything that the global reputation of German efficiency kind of promotes. It flies against all of that because, again, if this was a British carrier, for example, if BA, let's not even say if it was a low-cost carrier. Yeah. God forbid it was Jet2 or Ryanair, right? But if it was BA, I don't think BA passengers would have accepted that either, to sit on a remote stand through the night at Heathrow and not kick off. It would have been, someone would have been literally live to Sky News, you know, on FaceTime.
So true. Call the media. You know, I don't That's understand another thing how we should
call
have done
the media. It. How this Lufthansa got very, very lucky with no massive, you know, media attention on this.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It makes me think of, was it 2023? My year of being cursed at Heathrow, I guess it was 2023 to 2024. But when we landed on that flight from Doha on BA, and I don't even remember now why it took us hours to get a gate. And then when we were at a gate, there was no bus and everyone was in uproar. Keep in mind, we're on a comfortable 787-10. Everyone was, this is a disgrace. Everyone's yelling. And I'm like, you know, that's the energy that these passengers needed times 10. But again, we don't know what it was like.
I'm having visions of you showing the passengers on the Lufthansa flight, this is how you should be reacting.
Exactly. <Okay. laughs> My American side would get to come out. But on that note, you know, my thoughts are with these people who had to suffer overnight in those conditions.
Yeah.
My hope is that Carson Spohr will do something about it, but
we have question marks as to how you guys that's why I want to talk to a passenger. How did they just accept and suffer?
Because
you know, we can't understand that there wasn't one passenger who was absolutely against and realizing that this is potentially unlawful activity, which is why it's now sitting with the prosecutor's office. Yeah, I mean, look, exactly. this is a criminal assessment, and we will see how it plays out. But speaking of criminals, go on.
Mexico and cartels are also in the news as it relates to aviation, and not in a very fun way. Do you want to cover the basics, and I'll go into the nitty gritty, Alex?
Yeah, so I'm sure that many have seen in the headlines, following the death of one of the prominent leaders of a cartel, some violent retaliatory incidents have erupted all across Western Mexico, and it has affected airports, Guadalajara and Puerto Vallarta.
Vallarta,
both directly affected. Chaos in airports as flights were delayed, cancelled, some were suspended with little knowledge. See, here's one place that they weren't keeping passengers on board overnight, despite the fact that one whole side of the country just in complete cartel-related uproar, and still the passengers were freely roaming around the terminal running for their lives. But poor things. Anyway, many airlines suspending services to different parts of Mexico because of the instability there. You were there recently. What did you think when you saw all of this?
Exactly 1 month ago, Oscar and I were in Puerto Vallarta. Actually, we were flying out of Puerto Vallarta today, 1 month ago, and the airport was chaos. It was so full of people. I've almost never seen a terminal so overrun with capacity that's way more than it should be handling. There are so many flights going in and out of the US and Canada to Puerto Vallarta. It is packed. The city is packed with tourists. It is, really, I didn't expect that when we went there. So seeing these headlines was really, it's really quite shocking, because I personally don't think of Mexico as this type of place where something like this would happen. I think Mexico has so many tourists, so everyone is comfortable there. But in a situation like this, it really opens your eyes to travel makes you vulnerable. And when you remove airlines from the equation, there's no other way to get out, because here you're by the ocean. It's not like you're going to take a boat somewhere. And the cartels were blocking ways out by land. So airlines are such a vital tool for getting in and out. We were looking at different TikToks and videos on the internet of people in Puerto Vallarta, but also some people whose planes literally did a go around as they were landing and returned to the US, which I just think, what a moment of insanity when you think how close you are to being on the ground in this horrible situation.
Caught up in all of the, and everything that was unfolding in real time. I mean, that's really last minute.
And what
that's goosebumps. Actually the definition of touch and go, right?
Literally. Literally. It's a crazy scenario to even envision. Of course, our thoughts are with the locals, the people who have been killed by the cartel as well. But for such a tourist hub, it's really sad, because I think this is going to have long-standing implications for airlines, for tourism. And as I said, it's such a busy market with so many flights going in and out. And I can't imagine after seeing this, although flights have already resumed, so the suspensions didn't last for that long, these types of things leave a lasting impression. And I don't know, you know, if even all of Mexico or even all of Central America is going to be impacted by what we've seen here.
And worth highlighting that CJNG, which is the cartel involved in this situation, they are one of Mexico's most powerful and heavily armed criminal orgs. And historically, when a senior leader of this cartel has been targeted, retaliation has typically focused on infrastructure, high visibility infrastructure, you know, meltdowns with airports, but also highways and public transport and so on. They become the immediate flashpoints because they have the greatest, most visible disruption in a short space of time. So it generates that maximum media attention when you've got passengers running through the terminal worried. And the aviation implications of this are serious, because although, as you say, this was pretty short-lived in the grand scheme of things, and operations were restored shortly after, and things are generally fine now, aviation, as we speak about all the time, is so inherently exposed to just about everything and is so fragile in its reliance on, you know, the outside world functioning in a smooth way, that this does now put an additional layer of risk to flights to places like Guadalajara and Puerto Vallarta, as you said, because these are big markets for business and also for leisure traffic, with so many airlines, international airlines, charter, holiday package carriers, for example, from Europe, from the UK and so on. These are big markets there. So it's a little destabilizing, or very actually destabilizing for the for this region and for those airports that would otherwise be hosting thousands, tens of thousands of or hundreds of thousands of passengers and visitors, especially in the northern hemisphere winter, and everyone kind of flocking to wherever there is some sun. So it's again, one week we're talking about airspace politics and how vulnerable airlines are to that, and the week later we're discussing cartels. Yeah. You get it all on air.
Precisely. So on that note, let's jump into Q&A. So we have a message here from Matthew, who says, "Hey guys, welcome back for the season. Just finished up listening to the latest episode on the topic of Air Canada ordering the A350-1000. While not much is known about the onboard products they're offering, in a video they posted announcing the order, they highlighted the A350-1000's capacity, mentioning it could carry up to 400 passengers. I wonder if that means Air Canada will follow Philippine Airlines' decision to go 10 abreast in economy on the A350, because for context, Air Canada's 777-300s can accommodate 400 to 450 passengers, and PAL, Philippine Airlines, managed to fit 382 passengers on the A350 due to the 10 abreast economy. So do we think Air Canada will push through with that configuration, Alex? Or, I mean, what's the general trend?
This was spotted. But what I will say is, just a few weeks ago, I was at Airbus headquarters, and we were standing in the mock-up of an A350, and we were discussing how years and years ago, standing in the same place with the same folks at Airbus, we were only talking about the low-cost leisure operators that were taking the 10 abreast, meaning 10 seats across in economy class, because the standard was the 9333 when you're looking at the cabin, right? And so we were discussing, and the Airbus execs were kind of smiling at how the narrative has shifted, in that where typically it was only Air Caribe, French B, these low cost, or rather, if they were not low cost, these leisure, holiday driven airlines that are focused on increasing capacity, where it was only those airlines that were taking up the tight 10 abreast, they were smiling, kind of insinuating that they know now that this is the new standard, or at least the new standard that they were trying to get airlines on board with, because once one leads with 10 abreast, and if it's a prominent airline, for example, Philippine Airlines stepping into this area is great for Airbus, because they're able to now justify to all the other carriers, well, look, if it's economics you're worried about, look at what Philippine Airlines are doing. That passengers are fine. Everyone loves the 350. So they always need someone to make the first move that's not a low cost or a leisure carrier. And they have that with Philippine Airlines. They used some language with that I started to pick up on. Ah, maybe they are now framing this as more of a new standard. And this is what we've seen with Philippine Airlines. And so perhaps this is why it's mentioned in the Air Canada announcement. Maybe Air Canada has commit to being part of that new standard. I would find it unusual for them to mention this if
they had not made that commitment.
It's not something that you, if I'm comfortably insuring 333 because I'm Japan Airlines and I love economy class space for passengers, the last thing I'm doing in a press release on ordering my first ever A350-1000s is highlighting how many seats I can cram into economy, right? So it does lead me to be suspicious. We will look into it. I love that our listeners are bringing this to our attention and that you're remaining hyper-vigilant with these announcements. This is great. We'll come back to you on that. That's a good one. Yeah,
I do love the attention to detail. That's very like us. And finally for today, we have a question from George. Did you see the Bad Bunny chartered a Qantas A380, and we actually wanted to talk about this. So he says, goals. I agree.
Yeah, amazing. We don't often see A380s receive charter bookings because they are extremely, extremely expensive, highly complex white elephant aircraft, bless them, and they require so much TLC that it's just operationally incredibly difficult and incredibly expensive. It will cost millions just for definitely in excess of a million just for one flight. And so pretty remarkable that Bad Bunny, Benito himself, had used a Qantas A380 to move the show from South America to Australia, to Sydney, with Qantas receiving this as the special charter operator. That they can sometimes be if the price is right. And so, yeah, just really interesting how, again, aviation plays its role there.
Well, let's talk about what's interesting here is that obviously South America to Australia and New Zealand, actually South America to anywhere across the Pacific, is extremely poorly connected and there's very few options to fly. And in this case, not only are there hundreds of people involved with a tour like this that Bad Bunny is doing, but there is so much equipment. Sometimes you need to literally get a ship to take things across oceans. But in this case, I think he had just a week between shows in Sao Paulo and then in Sydney. There are no direct flights between those cities. So what do? You call up some of the local airlines, especially in this case.
Call up the Spirit of Australia.
Yeah, where you can get the biggest possible plane, the A380 itself, and fly it to you in Sao Paulo and then have it fly you back to Sydney, which they say this would probably cost around $1 million, which I think sounds like an accurate estimate. Incredibly expensive, but also so incredibly epic. And the fact that the aircraft was quite full, there were about 220 passengers, plus I imagine a ton of equipment on board. I mean, that's what a a cool thing to have been a part of. I just wish he'd invited us. Like, where was our invitation, you know?
I know. What's also funny is it seems to be part of the deal. Benito was escorted from the aircraft by Qantas staff. Did you see that? So that was kind of also the first indication. Yeah, so there are videos of Bad Bunny walking through arrivals at Sydney Airport, and there are fans, of course, and he has some smiling Qantas staff next to him. So Qantas were definitely delighted that they had been chosen for this charter. And what a mammoth expense, because don't forget, this aircraft had to fly to South America just to pick them up. So this is not a one-way thing. We're talking about chartering an A380 for over 30 hours of flying is significant. Yeah. But again, we've spoken about this before. This is how aviation plays its role in ensuring the world goes round. And a similar complexity and of that scale is how one Formula One moves from one destination to another within the same week.
And British Airways is loving it. British Airways,
they love it. Yeah, they do their 350s from Vegas to Doha when the Vegas F1 finishes and then it goes to Doha. It's phenomenal. So really, really cool. Great. Well, look, enjoy New Zealand. Have an amazing rest of your time there. Love that you got it out of the group chat within 3 minutes of suggesting it. And we all aspire to have that.
Yeah.
And let's regroup next week.
We will. And let us all, everyone listening to this, be grateful that we are not spending the night stuck on a Lufthansa A320 with ironing board seats. We can all go to bed. Since it's bedtime for me now, we can all go to bed appreciating that fact. It really I know I'll sleep better just thinking about it.
Honestly, I wish you sweet dreams of visualizing everything you would have done had you and I been on board together. You're in for a vivid night.
Yeah, and please, guys, send in what you would have done. We'd appreciate to read that next week when we see you on air. Bye-bye.
See you later.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month med plus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.